This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the areas of improvement in sobriety. So what are their 3 things that they have found they do differently or have experienced differently now that they don't drink? Because let's face it, going sober isn't the easy option, but it does make life a lot easier. And today I'm talking to Michelle, who is on the cusp now, on the home straight towards her 1 year of sobriety. Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You?
I'm good. I'm really good. Let's dive straight in. How long have you been sober now?
Well, I had to check my app today, actually, because I've forgotten, but it's 310 days. It was New Year's Eve that I had my last drink. So it's about 310 days.
So you're on that home straight.
I am. I am. It's unreal, really. Yeah, can't wait to get to that year mark. I think I'll be really proud. And then, yeah, 1 year on and then carry onwards, really.
And that's the key, isn't it? It's just, why would you go back when it does feel good? Because it does feel good to be sober, let's face it.
It does feel really good. And I can't imagine going back now. I think too much has changed and I just feel so much different in terms of how old I am. It's such a short space of time that things have improved and how much different I feel.
You are going to be celebrating your 1 year the same day as I celebrate my 2 years.
Oh, there you go. Joint celebration.
I'm afraid it's one of those things that we do share a soberversary with quite a lot of people when it's at New Year's. You don't feel as special sometimes. It was a brilliant time, I felt, to start. However, I would caveat that by saying I wish I'd started in the October when I first really wanted to. I don't know about you. What was your journey into sobriety like?
I think for me, I'd been thinking about it probably seriously for about 18 months, 2 years. I'd done the Sober October, but then you'd go back and I'd try and do... I never did Dry January because I always use that excuse of, oh, it's my birthday, it's just after Christmas, it's a rubbish month and it's somebody else's birthday, and doing this, doing that, which was just an excuse. But I had periods of time, like 2 weeks or a month where I'd be off alcohol, but I just realised more and more that I didn't actually enjoy drinking. It was just literally a habit of you went out, you socialised, you picked up that glass and you just kept knocking it back, really. And yeah, and I just started to realise that I didn't enjoy it. I'd also had to have a bit of a lifestyle shift because of my health a couple of years beforehand. So I was 3 stone heavier. I had high cholesterol, I was pre-diabetic, so that was a bit of a slap in the face at being told all that sort of at 46 years old. So I thought, well, I've got to have a lifestyle overhaul. The first thing I did was started exercise and running and diet. I think COVID helped that as well, because not that we were rationed, but you certainly couldn't like go and buy loads of stuff. You know, we had to buy one bag of pasta and one box of eggs and all of that. So I do think that helped. So I had changed my lifestyle, but I think for me, I realised that whilst I had done that and I reversed with pre-diabetes, that had really helped and I lost weight. I feel for me that I think deep down I knew that to feel 100% better, that alcohol was the last key to the puzzle, the last piece to the puzzle, so to speak. I didn't plan to begin with to be sober forever. I have to admit, I thought, right, I'm just going to do Dry January. I've been not wanting to drink for a long time now. And it got to the point that I'd every Friday, get home from work, I'd have a drink every Saturday, and every Sunday, I'd say to my husband, I don't want to do this anymore. I feel horrible. And that cycle went on for months. So I just bit the bullet. I followed Jodie and Sober Flourish and joined Jive January thing with her. And then it went on to 100 days. And I thought, I'll give it 100 days. And everybody was like, oh, my God, but you're going on holiday to see your son. Because my eldest lives in Malaysia. You are going on holiday to see your son. You won't be able to drink. And I was like, I'll be fine with that. I think when you become sober, you notice people say stuff like that more. Everything revolves around drinking. And yeah. The nearer I got to 100 days, I remember being away with my husband and we were walking back and I just said to him, and I wasn't quite 100 days, I think it was close to 100 days. And I just remember saying to him, I said, I don't think I'm going to drink anymore. And he went, no, I don't think you are. And that was it. So for me, I mean, I think some people think it's easy, but it's not, because if I'm honest with myself, that was a 2-year journey to get here, of trying to be sober and it failing and being with people that they drink all the time. So you just go with the flow. Took me a long time to realise you don't have to do that.
Yeah. That must have been amazingly reassuring then, to hear your husband say, no, I don't think you will.
Yeah, it was. He has been really supportive because he still drinks. He's not gone sober. What I have noticed, though, since I've stopped drinking, I think I may have been the instigator some evenings. Like, I'd be drinking and we'd both share a bottle of wine and I'd say, oh, let's open this, let's open that. And that doesn't happen anymore. So I do think, I wonder if he just went along with me a bit, or we egged each other on. So his drinking definitely reduced as well. But yeah, it was really reassuring because he's just accepted it. It's not changed anything in our relationship. I think a lot of people thought it might because I stopped drinking and he still was, but it hasn't. It was really reassuring and he has been supportive 100% of the time, to the point that, he'll sometimes... When it was our wedding anniversary a few weeks ago, he bought me a bottle of Prosecco. Just little things like that. Or he'll try and find me the nicest sparkling water.
The posh stuff.
Yeah. And he relented and he let me buy a SodaStream machine because he always said, oh, they're a waste of money. But no, he did. He let me buy that.
No, alcohol is a waste of money, I think we'll find. But yeah, I have my SodaStream. I love my SodaStream.
Yeah.
I do joke now. There used to be a soundtrack to when we got home from work, and it was usually the popping of a cork, which wasn't champagne, let's face it. Or it was of a can as my husband walked in. And now all you hear is this kind of blah, 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 the SodaStream. We both go to it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. I love my SodaStream. Wouldn't be without it.
Yeah, it is. It is good, isn't it? And isn't it funny, though, we think, oh, that's a waste of money, but actually you're hydrated from it.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
So with your husband, were you worried about what it was going to do to your relationship?
I was a little bit, because I did think, well, what are we going to do on a Friday night? We always used to, Friday nights was always, even when the kids were young, was always our night where, when they're grown up now, where me and Tony, that's my husband, would have a meal together and have a bottle of wine. That was our time for each other. We kind of, and that's what we did every Friday. We put the kids to bed early and we'd have dinner later, and that was our time for stuff. So, and that's just carried on over the years. I was thinking, it's going to change. And then, and as we've got older, I did progress to then sitting on the sofa after a meal, watching TV and sharing a bottle of red wine. So I did think that's missed. There was an element and I thought, have we got anything in common? That sounds awful, because I know we've got, it's not just that, but I think because it was so ingrained into our lifestyle, our relationship, it was a big part of it. And I thought, you take that away, what's left? And actually, there's loads.
But it is, isn't it? I think I had the same kind of nagging worries at the back of my mind. And I know Dale then did it with me, but he wasn't going to start. No. So I had to make that decision for myself. And I know a lot of people really do then struggle with that idea when they're in a relationship and you have got it centered around alcohol as a hobby, shall we call it? Yeah.
That's definitely what it was. It was a hobby kind of thing. You almost went to the shop together, think, oh, what wine should we have tonight? And then you'd stand there having a discussion about which one you wanted or, yeah. And so I was worried about that, but obviously it was unfounded, that definitely. We talk a lot more now. And I think I'm a lot more patient. I would say that's one of the biggest changes from becoming sober is relationships, not just with my husband, but with my children, with friends. I think I'm more patient. I listen, and I don't say that I didn't listen before, but it goes in. I think before when people were talking to you and you think you listen and then you go, sorry, can you repeat that? Because it just didn't go in.
Yeah.
Didn't
stick, does it? You know,
not at all, didn't stick at all. But now, yeah, there's it's definitely changed my relationships for the better, and I feel definitely more present for my kids. And sometimes I think as well, when you become sober, there is that element of guilt, because I do think I wish I'd done it sooner, because then I would have been more present with the kids, because I'm sure there's a lot of women out there, especially with that mummy wine culture and all of that, that you deserved a reward at the end of the day because you'd looked after your kids, that kind of thing. It was sort of, that's all I used to see on social media and little memes saying things like that. So I did go through a phase of feeling guilty about, I wish I'd done it earlier, and then I wouldn't have wasted those Sunday mornings laying on the sofa, putting, we used to call the TV the electronic nanny, just put that on so that they'd watch TV so I could nurse a hangover. At the same time, you know, I just got to draw a line under that. That is what it is. And I'm a much better mum now. I hope the kids agree with me saying that. But, you know, my daughter's away at uni and she's been struggling a little bit. And I think I'm much calmer coping with things. I'm much more rational. So she can come to me. And instead of going into that fight or flight mode or panicking and going, oh, my God, I don't know what to do, I can take a deep breath and think, right, hang on a minute, I've got to support her. I do think it's definitely relationships and just how I am with people. I'm a lot less shouty, apparently, but I didn't know I was shouty before. But they've all said that. So obviously I was obviously very irritable.
Although, aren't we, when we're drinking, we do tend to be, I shouldn't speak for everybody, but I was quite irritable. I was always on my last nerve.
Yeah, yeah, always, yeah. And it would be all the time. When I look back now, you think, oh, I only drink Friday and Saturday, and I might have one Sunday, but, you know, we're going to work tomorrow, so that, you know, deserve a drink before you go to work on a Monday, you know, calms the nerves, whatever. I don't drink all the time, but the effects of that just lasted all the time, because you'd have a drink on a Sunday and you think, well, I'm not drinking till Friday, I'm fine. Now that I'm sober, I think your body never gets it out of your system, because, and that's why I was irritable all the time, or I was tired all the time. Yeah, because as soon as it got to Friday, I mean, I barely walked through the door and I just, like, beeline for the fridge to get the wine out. It you know, it's barely put my bag down to just that was my first thought on a Friday getting home, was cracking open the wine. So now that I'm not drinking, it definitely affected my mood 24/7. It wasn't just when I was drinking, it was 24/7, 12 months of the year, it was affecting my mood. And I haven't really argued with, I mean, don't get me wrong, we have our disagreements, but like you were saying, I think when me and Tony both had a drink, and if I'd had one too many on that Friday night, then it would end up in a stupid argument about irrelevant stuff.
Yeah. That was getting on my wick as well, I think. I think that was one of the big drivers for me, was that Dale and I have a good marriage. And I think sobriety has really uncovered how good the marriage is.
Yeah.
But weren't we arguing about some stupid shit?
Well, I'll tell you about one argument, because it does. There was one time, don't really know why we got onto the Catholic Church, but we did. And I said, I must have said something that upset him. And I really kicked off, and I dragged a chair, dining room chair. I'm quite embarrassed that I'm even sharing this. Dining room chair up to the bedroom and barricaded myself in. I don't even know what the argument was about. Just something about the Catholic Church. Just barricaded myself in the bedroom.
Oh, I couldn't even tell you. We've had some absolute corkers. And because we were going motorhoming for the first time, I think that was like a catalyst. It was like putting us in a movable pressure cooker, right? And it was like we were going away for all these weekends away, and you could guarantee at some point one of us was asking for a divorce. You know, it was never... It's like, oh, let's have a lovely time in the Brecon Beacons. You know, let's change the location of where we have a row, shall we? And that'll be a break. we don't row now. And I think maybe that's a phase that a lot of marriages go through. I'm not sure, but it's such silly stuff. And then you wake up the next morning and you think, what was that about?
Yeah, I can't tell you now what that argument was about. It was a long time ago. But Tony does still bring that up, because I think he just finds it hilarious. We can laugh about it now, but actually, it's quite embarrassing.
That takes some strength, dragging a dining room chair up the stairs. At least you know you've got some strength in you. That's the running doing that for you.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
The thing that I said to myself when I was faced that day with thinking you've got to do something, and whether Dale does something or not, you've got to do something, because like I was in that loop, and I just thought, if it does uncover the fact that we aren't meant to be together, isn't it better to know?
Yeah.
And luckily it didn't. But why would you mask over problems and potentially then spend another 10 years, 15 years? Isn't it just better to rip the band-aid off and just know?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think, you know, I did do all that thing of worrying, is he going to think I'm boring? Are people going to think I'm boring? Is he not going to like me anymore? Or, you know, I did do all of that sort of panicking about, well, what if I'm not the life and soul of the party? I did all of that irrational thinking, really, and worried, what if we've got nothing in common? And like I say, it was, but if anything, it's made us realise how good we have got it. We're quite lucky, I think. He's always got my back and I've always got his. So we knew that before, but I think me not drinking, because he is one of those slightly frustrating people who can moderate. He can have a glass of wine and that's it. I can't do that. I used to think, what's the point of having just one glass of wine? I just couldn't do it.
I completely am with you with that. I didn't see the point of just one.
I'd got to the point where I just thought a bottle of wine was fine.
I had a friend say that to me, that you know, if we're going to take a bottle of wine a night, it's fine.
Mm.
So you are my holy grail. How you were drinking was how I wanted to drink. So just Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every journal entry on every Monday was, I'm not drinking in the week. I'm just going to drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This is how many units I'm going to allow myself. This is what I'm going to drink. I'm not going to touch this. I'm going to just drink wine. It was just so many rules.
Yeah.
But you've noticed, because some people will say, well, I only drink at weekends. How bad can it be? But you're right. You've got alcohol in your system. Well, it's not quite alcohol in your system, but alcohol is impacting your system for 5 days.
Yeah. And it definitely was. I think because it's become so normal to be drinking whenever you want to, or that it is normal to have a bottle of wine a night on a Friday and Saturday. But actually, that's more than you're supposed to have.
Yeah.
And I think, and I used to tell myself, well, I only drink Friday and Saturday and maybe one other day in the week. So I'm not got a drinking problem, but which I didn't think I had, but it was causing me problems.
Yeah. Isn't that the very definition of a problem? If it's causing you problems, it's a
problem. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I think because you think of somebody with a drink problem who can't function or it's really impacting their life, you think drinking heavily over the weekend, and that you, because you can go to work, you might feel horrendous, but because you can go for work and deal with your kids and still do day-to-day life, maybe not at your full potential, you don't think it's an issue. A lot of that's to do with the way it's advertised, the way it's on normalised. I mean, when I first stopped drinking, I had to stop watching some TV programmes because it was driving me nuts, because all I ever saw was them in the pub or at home having a bottle of wine. I was like, I can't cope with that. It was a bit of a trigger.
Oh, I hear you. I mean, there are so many irrelevant references to alcohol. When we go sober, we're unpicking so many different things, aren't we? Mm. We're unpicking kind of our own personal relationship with alcohol, but also you start to see how that's embedded in this larger culture. When I grew up, there was Ladette culture, and I've spoken about that a lot on this podcast.
Ladette culture, it was all right to go out and get absolutely wasted because it was funny. That's how it was seen, wasn't it?
And it was, you drank to get drunk. It wasn't, let's go out and have a nice meal and talk to each other.
No. I think that's what it is. But it was the Ladette culture. And I think for me, though, it's still, that's what it still was. You'd go out to get pissed. You'd go out with your friends. And when I say go out, it wouldn't even be like going, I mean, obviously I'm at an age now where the thought of going clubbing, even when I was drinking, was horrendous. But like, so going out, you'd go to a friend's house for a barbecue and you'd get pissed. I remember sat around one friend's house and we started chucking bottles of wine behind us when we'd finished drinking them. And you just, it's, yeah. I think it's impacted my kids because well, our eldest son does drink, but he's very good at moderate. He doesn't drink very much. But both the other two, I mean, my other son, when he went to university, he was all for joining the Sober Society because they had this where people who wanted to go out and have a good time, but they just didn't want to drink, could go. And then my daughter and I had a big conversation at the weekend. And I think this has come from me stopping drinking and realising how anxious alcohol makes you feel. And she's struggling a bit with anxiety at the moment. And she was worried about going to this Halloween party. And I said, well, if you don't want to go, we had a conversation about it. And then she said, I don't actually like drinking. I said, well, don't drink then. And she says, well, I'm worried what people think. So I don't think if I hadn't gone sober, I'd have been able to have that conversation with her. But I was dead, dead proud of her. She did go to that party and she didn't touch a drop of alcohol. And she had a great time. She still got home at 3 a.m, but she didn't touch alcohol. But I don't think I'd have had that conversation with her if I hadn't have been sober. And I do worry sometimes that they see how I used to behave and that's why they don't want to drink. But, you know, if that's the case, then it's a positive thing.
Aversion therapy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's actually, yeah. When you look at your drinking pattern, though, it really is, for a lot of people, your drinking style, that weekend drinking, is what we were aiming towards, but we were day drinkers. It's so essential that people get to see that you can stop if you're a weekend drinker. You can stop if you're a daily drinker. You know, mm-hmm. There are so many different stages, elements to people's drinking styles. But if it's a problem, which it invariably is, because it's a toxin and it increases anxiety and it's got all those downsides to mental and physical health, as well as energy levels, sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, I could go on and on. It's a bit of it's when you step back from it, it's a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah, but it's just doing that step back, isn't it? I mean, I had conversations in my head for a good 2 years about reducing drinking. And a lot of it did stem from how are people going to perceive me or what are they going to think of me. I've only had one person, and I think it was because they were drunk, say to me, oh, you're boring now, you don't drink. And I just ignored it. I just thought, well, if that's what you think. I don't think they remember saying it, and I don't think they actually meant it I just thought, well, and whereas I thought it would upset me, and it probably would have done if I'd been drinking, I almost shrugged it off. I just completely ignored it. I thought, I'm not even listening to that.
For some people, you're opening up how they feel about their own drinking habits.
Yeah.
Could be a fear that that person had that they would be boring if they didn't drink, and they often verbalize, particularly then when they've had a drink.
Yeah. And what I find as well is everybody, a lot of people now want to tell me how much they drink or how little, you know, they want to tell me their drinking habits. And I'm like, I'm not judging you. I think that's the other thing. People think, are you going to judge them for their drinking? I don't worry or mind what anybody else does. It's their life. That's up to them. But for me, it's not an option anymore.
Yeah. So what's your first thing that you've noticed in sobriety, the benefit?
The first thing I did notice was the improvement in some of my perimenopausal symptoms. One of the main reasons was lifestyle. And then obviously when I went to the doctor as well, and I said about other things, you know, it was clear that I was perimenopausal. That was another reason. He said, well, if you change your lifestyle, that can help with symptoms. So I obviously started doing diet and exercise, but still was having symptoms. So then I then went on HRT. And I'd been on HRT for 2 years, but I was still getting some night sweats, some hot flushes. I was still like, I mean, I've got a lot of hair, I know, but believe me when I say it was falling out in clumps. I was losing hair, nails were always broken, headaches, panic attacks. They were, you know, and anxiety as well. But they were a lot improved with HRT, but they were still there. They were still affecting my day-to-day life, you know, throughout the week. I remember getting to the end of the first month and I thought, oh my gosh, I've not had any night sweats or hot flushes. Because I didn't have them every day, but like the night sweats, I'd wake up and I'd literally think I'd have to get changed. Like I'd have to change my pajamas, or I'd have to have a shower. And I just thought, I've not had any night sweats, not had any hot flushes. My panic attacks were definitely better. Panic attacks and anxiety had really improved as well. And so, yeah, that was a bit of an eye-opener. And then I started looking into it more about the perimenopause and alcohol. And then I just thought, oh, my God, it really does affect them. And then as time's gone on, my sleep improved. I know that can be alcohol, but I used to sleep really well. And when I became perimenopausal, sleep was elusive. It really, really was. Oh, I'd do that thing where I'd wake at 3 a.m. and I'd be awake for 2 hours. And all of a sudden, I was getting 6 hours sleep a night, which was unheard of. I could concentrate at work more as well. I worked with children, and that was a very full-on physical and mental, you know, physically and mentally challenging sometimes. And I just found that I had much more energy with them. I worked with 2 and 3 year olds for 18 years. So, you know, it was a full on. And I just found that I had so, so much more energy because again, I'd noticed when I became perimenopausal, I was tired and lethargic all the time. And like I say, HRT that I was on definitely helped at the beginning. And I couldn't have done without it, but I realised the doctor was right, really. Lifestyle was something that does have a massive impact on menopause. And the alcohol, like I said before, was the last piece of the puzzle, I think. I just couldn't believe how much different I felt. I used to have headaches all the time as well. That was one thing that I really noticed improved. I mean, there's a whole list of symptoms with perimenopause, I know, but definitely it was the night sweats and the hot flushes for me. I couldn't believe it when they disappeared. And then I started getting 6 hours sleep. I thought, you know, I just thought, I wish I'd done it sooner. And then when I researched it more, there's so many people out there as well saying that when you get to perimenopause, you should reduce your alcohol intake. And it's true. Yeah, generally, I just had a lack of interest in things. And when I stopped drinking, like I say, my concentration was much better. I could do the paperwork at work because it was silly things like that. I used to sit there and I'd be looking. You used to have to do journals for children, you know, learning journals for the children. I'd just be sat there for 20 minutes thinking, I couldn't even think of how to start a sentence. You know, I just, or I'd try and do their daily diary and I'd be thinking, and I'd been with them all day, but like literally getting it from my brain onto the paper, it just didn't happen. So definitely for me, that was the first thing I noticed. So how many of the symptoms either really reduced or, like I say, disappeared.
That is phenomenal. I can completely understand why that would happen. But it is just unbelievable in a way, isn't it? That all of those symptoms, things like you would not put hand in hand the night sweats and headaches. I mean, headaches, no. Because you could argue, well, maybe I was hungover, but you weren't drinking in a week.
It's just like a constant headache all the time. And it just went. And that could be a combination of because I wasn't sleeping as well. I don't know, but it's just in that first month, that first, when I did dry January, when that first month, I just thought that's probably what drove me forward to do, oh, let's do 100 days kind of thing. Because I thought, well, hang on a minute. If this much changed, you kind of think, is it a fluke? I'm not saying that, you know, reducing alcohol is going to cure the menopause. That's not what I'm saying at all. What it did do was just really reduce things for it. Definitely, it's made me realise the stuff that's out there about perimenopause and menopause. It's a combination of maybe lifestyle and HRT for people. Definitely lifestyle impacts it without a shadow of a doubt.
I don't think it's spoken about enough. It's another area, isn't it? I don't think people understand the links. In fact, you know, we've had the messaging for years, haven't we? Or glass of red wine is good for your heart. And it's won't even go into that, why that's a load of rubbish. But we haven't really had the conversations about menopause, perimenopause. I don't think we talk about it enough.
I just thought perimenopause was, this is literally what I thought it was when I was younger, was that you got your period stopped, you got hot flashes and facial hair. That was basically what.
And you went grey. And they hand you out a walking stick.
Yeah, literally, that is all I thought. I didn't know anything about it. So when I started having symptoms, I mean, without sounding too good, but like bloating, I was always feeling uncomfortable and my stomach was bloated, and then that just disappeared. And that could be just taking alcohol. But I mean, bloating's another symptom of perimenopause, and that disappeared. My hair stopped falling out. And, you know, because I have got lots of thick, curly hair, I know, but it really was. I would be stood there with my hands cupped together and it would be full of hair. And I was going, what is going on? And for me, I think that was the main reason. I thought, well, if it's making me feel this much better about, you know, being perimenopausal, then this is a no-brainer.
So what's your second thing?
My second thing, I think, like we were saying earlier, is my relationships have really, they've vastly improved too. Like I say, I'm more patient and tolerant and more supportive, I think. I'm a better person to be around. Yeah, I think I'm probably, not that I was a horrible person before, but I think I'm a nicer person to be around, and just much more present for my family, really, which, like I say, I wish I'd done it years before, but I try not to dwell on that. I'm much more present for them now. Certainly, I think my daughter talks to me a lot more. Because I listen, again, I listen to her. Because sometimes she'll say to me, Mum, you're not even paying attention. And I was, but like I say, it just wasn't going in. But with all of my kids, I think I've definitely got better relationships with them.
You noticed a change in friendships?
Yeah, I've noticed. Friendships, I would say I know who are my real friends. And they are still the people that have always been my real friends for the last 20 years. So I'm really pleased about that, because you do think the ones that had been friends for the longest, would that change? I'm probably more selective about saying yes to going out to things now. I think those sort of friendships, those that you think were friends, when you realise it is just drinking that you've got in common. Don't get me wrong, they're lovely people, but I just don't want to do those things anymore. So some friendships have shifted, and it's made me realise who are my true friends. So there's a couple of surprises as well, because there's a couple of people who I didn't really know at all. I did know them, but they were more friends of friends, have become closer friends, and they feel the same about alcohol as I do. So we started going for coffee, and they weren't people that I ever really saw on my own before. I used to see them in a group with other people. So new friendships have formed as well. And I've made new friends with people, you know, from not drinking, definitely. Sort of where I live and via social media, because there's, you know, a couple of people that I've met up with from not drinking. So definitely I have noticed which are friendships I want to continue with, shall we say. I've had a couple of people message me as well, people from where I live just message me because they've been seeing my Instagram, obviously see that I follow yourself and some other people, and they've messaged me saying, asking for advice on cutting back on alcohol, which I find that really, well, I find it quite flattering, but and really strange. Like I say, people that I know to say hello to are coming to me for, you know, like, can we meet up and, you know, want to know more about what you've done kind of thing. You don't think you're going to make new friendships when you hit 51. So it is quite nice. You think all your friendships are made.
Yeah, exactly. And you also think that you're not going to make any new friends when you go sober as well. And it's like,
no, you think you're going to lose them all, I think.
Did you lose any friends?
No, I haven't lost any friends. Like I say, the ones that are still my closest friends are still up. My sister, I think, struggled with it more because our relationship, you know, as soon as I text her, say I'm leaving, I'm on my way kind of thing, she'd say, right, the Prosecco's in the fridge. And our, you know, it was very much when I look at our Facebook pictures, it's just me and my sister always got a glass in her hand. And she was supportive of me, really supportive. We are very close, me and my sister, so I just think she struggled with it. But I wouldn't say I've lost any friendships. I haven't, not yet. There's some that are...
Yet. I'm working on it.
I think some aren't as strong as I thought they were, kind of thing, but I haven't lost any.
Sometimes you can find that it's not that the friendship... there was anything wrong with the friendship, but drinking was the thing you had in common.
Was, yeah.
I think that the improvement in relationships, in friendships, in familial relationships as well, that is a massive thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a massive thing. I didn't realise how much improved they needed to get. Does that make sense? By giving up alcohol, my relationships are so much better, but I didn't think there was anything wrong with them anyway, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now that makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. So what about your third thing?
I think the third thing for me, and today is proof of that, is that I'm becoming much more confident and I'm starting to believe I'm much more capable of doing things than I've ever given myself credit for. And doing this podcast is one of them, because if you'd known me 2 years ago, I mean, this is so far out of my comfort zone. It's true, but I just think it's given me the belief that I can do things, and if I fail, that doesn't matter. But I've tried, but I can do. There's a lot of things that I can do, but, you know, that I didn't give myself credit for. And things like I've started looking at doing a creative writing course, because I've always loved. I used to love writing, and I used to do it all the time. And I just thought, oh, I'd quite like to do that. So just, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that. I would have said, I'm too old or whatever. You know, you just do. And I said, but I've started looking at things that interest me, and I think, oh, I could do that. I could give that a try. Why not? So I think, yeah, definitely more confident, I think. And I hope that carries on.
I'm sure it will. I mean, it's amazing when you I like the why not mentality, but that when you tackle that relationship with alcohol, when you go sober, you can do anything. If you can go sober when everybody else is obsessed, like you say about the television programs and everywhere you look, if you can do that, you can do anything.
You can. I think you really can. And it, like I say, it doesn't matter if I try something and it doesn't work or I'm no good at it. It doesn't matter. I've given it a go. And I used to think things like that. I thought, well, I don't want to try that because if I'm no good at it, people will laugh at me or all this, that, and the other. Whereas now I think, well, I'm going to give this creative writing course a go. And if I'm rubbish at writing stories, then obviously it's not for me. I can do something else. But just that confidence to try something new and not worry about the outcome. I've never had that before.
And also, who are these people that are going to laugh? We tell ourselves these stories here. People are going to laugh at us. Who?
Exactly. Exactly. It doesn't matter. I'm just doing it as a hobby and just something that I used to like doing. It's not, you know, because I'm going to, you know, go out and start writing novels. That's not it at all. It's just something that I'd like to do. So, yeah. Like you say, who are these people that are going to laugh at us?
And actually, I was listening to a fantastic podcast yesterday between, it was Rangan Chatterjee and I think Dan Seagal, if I've pronounced his name right. And Dan was talking about his son and his son. They were talking about the fact that you can just do things for doing things' sake.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a lot of joy in doing something because you enjoy it. And in this podcast I was listening to, Dan was explaining his son was got into music, really enjoyed his music. But the minute it ever became academic, he lost interest completely and he would almost go against it. And that really triggered something for me because that's exactly how I felt about music. I didn't want to do grades, but I can play. I play the saxophone, one thing. But the minute it became about having to do it or having to do it perfectly, I just wasn't interested.
Yeah.
And had this amazing conversation around why can't we just do things?
Yeah.
Just for the sake of the sort of pleasure we get out of the moment and in doing it.
Yeah, that's it. I would never have done it though. I would never have even looked at doing it. I really wouldn't have if I hadn't have stopped drinking.
Is that also an element of you've got more time as well as confidence?
I think that's probably, yeah, because you're not wasting so much time with feeling, you know, hungover or just, I mean, the only other way I can describe it is I just used to feel blur all the time and I don't anymore. So I have got, I've got more time. I've got more confidence because I'm not drinking all the time. I feel like I could put the time and effort in and, you know, I've got sort of the brain power now to sit and concentrate and take things in and learn new skills. So yeah, I think there's definitely, it all comes together, doesn't it? It's amazing when you actually stop and think how much alcohol stopped me doing. I mean, I could probably fill a blooming notepad of what it stopped me doing, but it's not until you do stop that you realize it.
Yeah, and it is a good thing to kind of keep those things in mind and just go, wow, you know, the difference is now, the difference is how I cope with bad news, how I cope with good news, how I deal with worry, how I deal with stress. It's all so, so different.
Yeah, I definitely, I'm much better at dealing with, like you say, the curveballs life throw at you. Like, yeah, definitely. We recently lost a member of our family, and that was my auntie. And just being able to be there for my mum. And my cousin asked us, me and my sister, to do a reading. Well, I would never have done that before. So it definitely helps you cope with things. And yeah, I just think it's made me much more capable of coping with life in general.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about your aunt.
Thank you. It was a shock, but like for my mum, they were really close. So I was just glad I was able to be there for her, really. But yeah.
Having that sort of ability to be really available emotionally You were saying earlier about being able to listen, and it's not that you weren't listening, it's just that it's somewhere it wasn't sticking in your mind when you were drinking.
No.
I completely get that.
Yeah. And it also makes you lose the ability to, I mean, I struggle with that now sometimes. There's obviously the element of nerves as well, but sometimes to convey your, you know, when I was trying to give my children advice or explain how I felt or how they could deal with the situation, it was all in there, but it just would not come out. Just I could never convey what I was thinking because it took so much effort to sometimes think, right, okay. And then my daughter, like I said earlier, used to say, "You're not listening to me." And I'm like, "No, I am. I just can't say what I want to say."
Yeah. Is that what they, because I haven't had many perimenopausal symptoms.
Yeah.
And I know this podcast isn't about perimenopause, but I'm gonna pick your brains here. I haven't had many symptoms, and I think that may be down to the fact that I stopped drinking at 44. And I wonder if I was sort of on the cusp, because I wouldn't have said I had any particular symptoms. But then when you talk about things like bloating, headache, well, how would I know? I mean, I was just permanently bloated and feeling blah and waking up at 3 a.m. And so I do wonder how much of it was perimenopause and how much was alcohol, but equally then removing, our bodies are going through so much.
Yeah, it definitely impacted a lot for me. And it wasn't until I stopped drinking that I realised that, or like you said earlier, although you're not drinking, I wasn't drinking every day, the impact it was having on my body, it was all the time. I did a lot of looking, reading about the perimenopause, and I didn't realise that these other symptoms existed, so to speak. I really did just think it was about hot flushes and getting old.
Basically. Yeah. It's a whole new world, isn't it? And it's like you get to a certain age, you think you've got your life sorted. Your kids are all right. And then.
Yeah, I just thought, and I think it's a cruel thing. Your kids start growing up and leaving home, and you're already feeling emotional about that. And then you're whacked with something else that just sends you all over the place.
So far from wine being a solution, then it was. It's not the solution. Remove it and you'll feel a lot better.
No, it's not the solution. And I know I've said this a few times, but I think I do feel like it's a lot of the time drinking is aimed at women. Well, it's aimed at everyone I know, but there's definitely, like I said before, mummy wine culture, and you've had a hard week, it's okay. You know, it's wine time. I remember one of the gifts I had bought for me when I worked at the nursery was it was a beautiful handmade like tag, and it was said, "We think our child is one of the reasons you drink, so have one on us." And it went around a wine bottle, and I just thought, who even thought that? You just, and that was, I know, it's terrible,
it's
isn't
wrong
it?
On so many levels. I mean, that's wrong on so many levels. I can't even unpick that.
I know.
A poor child.
There's always a reason to drink, kind of thing. So,
yeah. Oh, it is. I mean, it is. You've only got to walk through gift shops, and nobody gets out of this house sober was one of those house signs I saw in a gift shop the other day. I was going to buy it and sort of amend it somehow with a black marker. Nobody gets out of this house not sober. Right. Yeah. I will convert you. It is a lot of messaging, a lot of targeted marketing. I always recommend the Holly Whitaker book, Quit Like a Woman, to people, because that talks about how women have been targeted. And it's not to negate how men have been targeted, because I think we're all being targeted.
I agree.
Equally, I think we were an untapped market a few decades ago, and I think they've definitely tapped us now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I grew up, nobody really drank at home. It was literally, if you went, the only time I ever saw my parents drink at home was if we went to somebody's house for a barbecue. But other than that, it was when we went out for a meal and they might have some wine with the meal, or if we went to the pub.
Yeah.
They never drank at home. Whereas now it's like that's, you know, it's so accessible, I think.
It is. And that's kind of the thing that we're modeling as well. Like when we talk about, so what you're doing now is you're modeling sobriety to your children.
Yeah.
Whether it was a bit of aversion therapy and they're going, right, okay, I'm going sober now, it doesn't really matter. It's what they're looking at now. And that's
Yeah.
what I comfort myself with my 13-year-old now she is. It's like, well, actually, I'm showing you that you can correct your actions, you can change, you can realize that something isn't good for you and stop doing it.
Yeah.
This is important to model, which you've shown your children.
Yeah. I think you see it around a lot, don't you? Is that alcohol's the only drug you've got to justify why you don't do it, kind of thing. Where is that the right way? Yeah. And it's true. But it's not seen as that, is it? It's seen as it's a fun thing. And it's fine to do it, which for some people it is, but not for me. It's taken me a long time to realize that.
So when it comes to how you feel about alcohol now, where would you say you are with it? Did you go through a phase of really getting angry at it?
Yeah, because I felt like when I first stopped drinking, I just felt like it was everywhere, around every corner. It's just in your face all the time. Adverts on the radio, like I said before, on TV shows, memes on social media, or something would come up, and birthday cards everywhere I went, and I was really angry at it at one point, because I thought, and maybe that's part of what happens when you give up. But yeah, I was just like, I just was angry at it, because I felt like it glosses over what alcohol really is and what it can do to you. You know, I know there are people out there that can moderate. I'm worried that I'm sounding judgy, because I'm not. I've got a lot of, I've, it doesn't bother me now being out with people and them having a drink at all. What I've noticed is that most of the people I hang around with, like my family, and that they can all moderate. They can have one or two drinks and they're done. It was me that couldn't at these do's, but I didn't notice it when I was doing it, when I was drinking. I thought they were all the same, but they're not.
That's a very, very good point, actually, is that when we're drinking, we assume everybody drinks like us. And it's when you stop, actually, that you realize, oh, they're not drinking anything, or they're on tea now. Or, I mean, that's mind blowing to me and always was that somebody would have a drink and then move to a cup of tea or something.
Yeah.
That I could never get my head around that. But there are people that drink like that. But honestly, don't worry, it is hard. And I think we worry about sounding judgy. But in all
Yeah.
fairness, I don't think those moderate drinkers will be listening to the podcast. Maybe your family will, but I don't think your average moderate drinker is going to be drawn to a podcast called The Sober Rebel. But I think if most people are honest, oh, it's a weird one, isn't it? There is a big problem under the surface for a lot of people. And so,
Yeah.
whereas they may appear to be completely in control, I'm not saying that this is a sweeping statement for everybody, but there are people that seem really successfully to appear moderate drinkers. But then they'll come up to me and say, actually, I've got a problem. And I don't feel in control. And, what I show to everybody else is completely different to what I'm experiencing at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think it's a really grey area, isn't it? It's hard
Yeah.
not to sound judgy, but equally we've got to have these conversations. We have to talk honestly about it so that those people in that grey area of drinking don't feel alone. You were, as I say, and I've said it a couple of times, the Holy Grail for me, your drinking style. And yet you were experiencing so many negative things. It would have been easy for you to gloss over that and think, well, I'm not drinking like that person down the road.
Yeah, I think for a while I did do that. I think for a while I think, well, I don't drink as much as them, or I haven't got a drinking problem because I don't need to drink every day, and I can still go to work and I can still function. So I did do that for a while. It takes a lot to be honest with yourself and think, hang on a minute, that you need to stop and really look at this, take a hard look at this. because I'd already made so many changes, I thought I had got to the point where I was thinking I was kidding myself, really, about drinking. But yeah, I definitely felt when I first gave up that everything was just glossing over and glorifying alcohol. Is that, you know, it's sort of made a joke of, isn't it, really? These cards, like I say, cards you see and everything you see around, just that it, making alcohol okay.
Yeah, it's almost glorifying it, isn't it?
It is glorifying it, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Which really, it's in the same league as smoking and drugs. It's
yeah. And that's the thing, you open your eyes, and then do you find it easier now to sort of resist it? You know, because it, in the early days, there's lots of resisting of it, like you say, not watching certain TV shows.
Yeah.
As the time is ticking on, you're approaching your year now. Are you finding it's getting easier?
I am finding it's getting easier. There still might be the odd fleeting moment, but it is a fleeting moment, and I just think, well, that's just ridiculous, and push it, you know. Like, it was a situation about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it wasn't a work event. That, again, that was out of my comfort zone. So it was a really posh do, and we had to dress up, and I walked in there, and I thought, oh, I could really do with a glass of wine. And then I was sort of, no, you don't.
Yeah.
But I think it was because in the past, a situation like that, which made me feel really uncomfortable, I would have just had a glass of wine because it relaxed me. It made me feel less anxious for that evening. I didn't realise then it would just make me feel more anxious for the rest of the week. But I think it was that association. But yeah, literally, it was a fleeting moment. I thought, don't be so ridiculous. And it didn't, yeah, I can deal with it a lot more now.
And I think this is important to have a conversation about, because people will panic when they get a thought like that. You know, they've been sober for a few months and, you know, maybe even for over a year or two. And then all of a sudden a situation will bring up a thought, oh, I could just have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And that's when they may panic. What it actually is, and I'll put my sort of therapist head on here, the brain is a prediction machine. And so the brain is always scanning, and we also create habits, neural pathways to make life easier.
Yeah.
So what's actually happening there is you have a familiar pathway, like you correctly identified there. Yeah. The familiar pathway was, well, I'm dressed up, I'm feeling a bit anxious, this is an event, I would normally have had a drink at this point. So a quick switch around in the moment, if you get a thought like that in it, is to say, oh, that's interesting, I would normally have had a drink in this moment. But it's also understanding thoughts will come, but thoughts can go.
Yeah.
What would you say to somebody who's at day one or thinking about sobriety, maybe sober curious? What piece of advice would you give them?
Oh God, that's a hard one. I think I would tell them to protect their sobriety, whatever the cost at the beginning. The two things I did was, if I was really anxious, or I just thought I really don't want to go to an event or something like that, I would say, how's it going to make me feel if I don't go? And if that made me feel better for not going, then I wouldn't go. The other thing I would say is surround yourself with a community of people that are doing the same as you. I think those two things is what got me through that first 30 days. And talk about it. Surround yourself with people like you and talk about it. And actually, sometimes I've been surprised about people that I thought were big drinkers. And like I said earlier, and they've messaged me and they say, you know, I really want to do what you're doing. And you'll be surprised. There's more people out there that are sober curious than you think.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. I think it's a fascinating journey of self-discovery. I really do. And thank you so much for your time today. It has been lovely to catch up.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
And I will be cheering you on your 1 year anniversary.
Thank you. I'll cheer you on your 2 year.
No, what's great about New Year is they set fireworks off for us. Isn't that great?
That is, yeah.
It has been an absolute pleasure catching up.
Thank you for having me.
As always, I'll link Michelle's Instagram and also my own and a few more useful links in the show notes. There you'll find a link to my website where you can find out more about my story and how I got sober. There are links to my audiobook, where I take you through that experience of early sobriety and getting myself out of that resetting loop that I found myself in so that sobriety stuck for me. There's also information on there about how you can work with me, because I was a therapist long before I went sober, but now sobriety is something I really do support people with, along with things like anxiety, boundary setting, low mood, fears and phobias or confidence issues. So if you'd like any support, please just send me a message and I'll get back to you. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed it.